It seems like just about every day there's a new cat video on YouTube that has millions of people clicking on it and laughing. From their big eyes to their delicate paws, there's a lot to love about our feline companions. But when people bring cats into their homes, sometimes the laughter and cooing stops and the frustration starts. I'm Maria Carter, and on today's Central Standard, we're speaking with cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy. He's the star of the TV show My Cat from Hell and has a new book, Cat Daddy: What the World's Most Incorrigible Cat Taught Me About Life, Love, and Coming Clean. We'll be exploring how the behaviors of both cats and humans feed into each other and welcoming your calls about your cat or cats. That's coming up right after this hour's news. Cat out of the bag, the cat's pajamas. Cat got your tongue? Curiosity killed the cat. These are just a few of the sayings about cats that show how entrenched they are in our everyday lives. But even as wonderful as cats may be, sometimes the relationship between pet and human can be strained. That's where cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy steps in. He's the author of Cat Daddy: What the World's Most Incorrigible Cat Taught Me About Life, Love, and Coming Clean. He's also the star of the Animal Planet show, My Cat from Hell. Jackson, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you, Maria.
Well, first of all, what is a cat behaviorist?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out. You know, the funny thing was when I started doing this, there's such things as veterinary behaviorist. Veterinary behaviorist, obviously, they go to school to be a behaviorist, which is so far beyond the pale of what I'm capable of doing that I felt really bad calling myself a behaviorist. And I really had a hard time just coming up with anything. That's why I'm Cat Daddy. Originally, I was Cat Boy. And then I grew into
Cat Daddy.
It was my cat mitzvah. and then I'm Cat Daddy because behaviorist still makes me uncomfortable.
Well, you're not what the typical person might think of as a cat person, just by looks.
Yeah.
But in my experience, a lot of people from all walks of life like cats or have a cat. And I'm sure you come across people that look like everything.
Well, no, of course. And it's funny because we are such a dog-centric world. Yet in this country, cats outnumber dogs by a long shot. I mean, there's about 90-some-odd million cats in homes in the U.S. right now, and I think there's only 60-some-odd million dogs, yet dogs get all the love. I know that there's a lot of cat people out there that just have to come out of the closet, that's all. Especially guys. I mean, guys are just so, oh, I'm a dog guy, you know what I mean? And I think it's one of the great things about, well, not looking typical, because I throw you off a little bit, and maybe you'll allow yourself to be a little more catish.
Well, and your book is kind of about your journey to becoming Cat Daddy, and about one cat in particular, Benny. Who was Benny?
Benny was just another cat, actually, in the shelter. How many thousands came through that shelter? And one day I was conducting a meeting at the front desk, and I could see through the blinds somebody run up with a little carrying case, one of our carrying cases, and drop it at the front door and run. And I caught her before she got back to her car, and she goes to explain that not only did he get hit by a car, his pelvis was shattered, she didn't have the money to fix it, and by the way, she never bonded with him anyway, so she called him unbondable. And I took him, I decided I was going to foster him back to health, and of course, 14 years later, I was a foster failure, but a proud dad.
Well, unbondable, is any cat unbondable?
No. I mean, the thing about cats is they challenge you to approach the animal way of thinking. See, dogs come right over to our side of the fence. Cats don't do it. So every animal is bondable. Are they conditioned to come to humans right away? No. And cats are not. It's not their primary purpose. But of course, I've bonded with every animal I've ever come in contact with.
And you mentioned that, you know, you're not the typical cat person. Did you have cats growing up?
No, I had a dog and I had goldfish. and besides that, I didn't even come into contact with cats much until, you know, past grad school. And then it wasn't until I started working at the shelter, literally. I had been working there a week and suddenly all the cats are coming around me. And they chose me, you know, and who am I to look a gift horse in the mouth or gift cat?
And you're right that, you know, you were at a pretty tough point in your life when you were started working at the shelter.
Yeah.
Did cats connect with you in an emotional way that maybe humans weren't at that point?
Animals, period. I mean, I was never all that species specific back then. It was the fact that these animals were so traumatized, were so neglected, abused, abandoned. You know, they were so in need of any human affection. They were just so hungry for it. That for me, that was something that humans never really give you. You know, we have those shields, you know, and we have language and we have all these ways to keep you away from me. And those dogs and those cats, they were just absolutely, like I said, they were thirsty for that connection.
And did you learn from the cats about yourself? And
oh, sure. I mean, one of the things that cats taught me was embracing the mysterious, embracing the gray. You know, I mean, there's nothing black and white about cats. And I realized along the way there was nothing black and white about myself either. I think one of the common traits amongst addicts is most of us are perfectionists to some degree or another. So when we approach failure of perfection, it gives us an excuse to numb out. And that was one of those things.
Well, you write about something that I think we've probably all seen but haven't put a name to, compassion fatigue that you encountered at the shelter. Can you just describe what that is?
Compassion fatigue is you know, we all go into the shelter system with high hopes, idealism. We're going to affect a change in euthanasia rates. We're going to make sure that every animal that comes through our hands is well cared for. And let me tell you, you know, when part of your job is to kill animals, healthy animals, you lose that idealism real fast. The shine comes off your purpose pretty fast. And unless you have A, support, and B, a vision that you're working towards, you will burn out. And compassion fatigue is one of those things where suddenly you are treating those animals like product. You are treating them no differently from, you know, French fries that you serve out. And when that happens, my job at one point was to make sure people left, you know, because those animals deserved our full attention and our full compassion.
And what can be done to improve shelters for specifically cats?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of my sweet spot. I mean, that's the thing that you know, my techniques and my approach to cats came from necessity. I mean, these cats were coming to me and they're saying, you know, we're with you. We like you, you know. And in the meantime, I was killing them on a daily basis for something as simple as just not showing themselves well. And the techniques that I've developed over time are based on positive reinforcement. And once you get a cat to do something simple, turn around, face their audience, come to the front of the cage, you know, just as much as there's compassion fatigue on the human level, there's shelter fatigue on an animal level. Imagine being in a cage as often as these animals were. And that saved lives. I mean, one of the great things was that I saw a decline in the time I worked there almost 10 years, a decline in cat euthanasias dramatically. And that was because I was enriching their behavior. I was making it fun for them. Playtime and exercise and mind-body stimulation that dogs always got, by the way. Dogs always had classes where we had volunteers who would take them out for walks or training classes or just take them out to a yard and play with them. Things that make dogs tick. Cats were sitting in cages. So that was one of those things. I mean, I go around the country right now. I teach to shelter staff, volunteers, foster parents, how to make the most of every moment that you spend with these cats. And that's one of the big ways that we're going to reduce euthanasia. But the other way is affect the environment itself. There's no excuse, I don't think, for cages anymore, unless cats are completely antisocial with other cats. But we've seen, you know, the catification of different shelters. Again, I go, and I mean, that's my big thing, you know, every time I go to a shelter, I'm like, can I change this? Can I, you know, but these are the ways we can affect euthanasia rates now, you know.
Well, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Maria Carter. Our guest is Jackson Galaxy. We're discussing cat and human behavior. Now we ask, does your cat do something you just can't explain, or maybe you have the problem cat? Give us a call, Kansas City. Join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. What are some of the ways a shelter can actually make that space more cat-friendly?
Well, first of all, I remember that cats see the world in three dimensions. You know, when I talk either in the book or on the show about tree dwellers and bush dwellers, different cats who fit different categories, it's all about the way they like to hunt. Cat mojo, the thing that is my philosophy, is this basic approach to what makes cats tick, what really propels them through the world. And one of those things is ownership of territory. So if they're in a cage, stainless steel cage, which gets disinfected every day, they don't own anything, that will send them into a behavioral, energetic, and physical nosedive. And we need to have open spaces where these cats can own the spaces, where they can find out who they are, where as volunteers we can challenge them spatially and bring them forward into the world and raise their confidence, confidence that comes through ownership. So what I want to do is remake all of these rooms. They're showcases, by the way, as well. Watching a cat work their environment leads that cat to go home, because you can imagine that cat in your living room. I also want to make these rooms like living rooms so that you can go in there, sit on a couch and have a cat interact with you. They will then go home. You know, it's impossible, I think, for every cat to find a home while they're sitting in cages.
Well, if someone out there is looking to adopt a cat, what should they look for?
Well, look for the cat to complement your life. I mean, you know, look, personally, I want to see senior cats and special needs cats go home. I'd rather you not get a kitten, you know, only because, first of all, there's all these, you know, illusions that you have of a kitten. Oh, I can affect their behavior from birth. Oh, I can, you know, my kids will grow up with them. You know, cats have an average lifespan at this point of 15. I've got a 20-year-old at home. I've got a 19-year-old at home. They can live nice, long lives. But that said, do you want to bring a 20-year-old home with, you know, a house full of kids under the age of 12? No. You know, I mean, you don't want to stress that cat out. You also, if you have other cats or dogs at home, you want to make sure that this cat gets along. So, for instance, in these common rooms, this is another thing that's so great. You look at that cat that comes to the front of the door, and you say, well, my cat sort of hangs to the middle. Cool. They work well. If your cat's going to challenge for that front position, you know, probably not something you want. Do you have a wallflower at home? And that one that comes to the front can demonstrate to them, be their social bridge, bring them forward. That's what you want to do as well. You just got to imagine that cat in your home. You know, do you have high activity levels and this cat's a spaz? Go for it. You know, are you a senior yourself and you live by yourself? Adopt a senior, you know.
So cats clearly have some different personalities for that people can look out for.
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, you know, we have cats that are just spazzes, you know. I mean, one of the things that you want to think about is from the age of about, you know, 6 months to about 18, 19 months, cats are teenagers. They're pushing buttons. Like, I mean, they are no different than human teenagers, you know, like, Dad, can I have the car keys? You're like, no, and then I steal the car anyway. You know what I mean? That's what these cats are. And, you know, again, you want to be able to challenge them, keep them, you know, behaviorally active. And so that in that case, you know, a house full of kids is a good thing.
Well, we've got some callers ready to go. Doris from Overland Park, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a question about the calico personality.
Uh-oh.
Do you think there is one?
Actually, there is. And it's funny, and especially torties. I mean, torties, by the way, calicos are tricolor, brown, black, and white. Torties are that mottled brown and black. They usually don't have the white. Of course, there are tortie and white, which is, means that the white is underneath the belly. There's all kinds of things. There's torbies, which is tabby, striping, and tortie. But all of those coat patterns, we call it tortitude. And tortitude, you know, torties, calicos can be much more sensitive. I had a vet friend in New York who said that somewhere around 80% of his Prozac patients were torties and calicos.
Prozac for cats. So.
Prozac for cats, sure. And now it has just been, there has been a study that just came out which finally associates coat pattern with behavior patterns. And so we can finally say that, yes, torties definitely and calicos definitely have a personality type. They're usually much more sensitive to their environment. I see a lot more behavioral problems in them.
What? How do you deal with a cat that's sensitive to their environment like that?
Well, you modify the environment, first of all. I mean, you know, humans hate that. No human wants to bend to the will of their cat. That is one of the biggest problems I come across, is that they see it as bending to the cat's will when it actually is just compromise. I mean, do you want your cat to pee on the pool table, or would you like that not to happen? Well, then you have to compromise. When they're sensitive to their environment like that, constant noise is one of those things. You have to look at, like, how your home is overstimulating the animal and work it appropriately.
And Doris, do you have a calico?
I do, and I also have a black big guy, and he's totally different. And as a foster, I would recommend everyone get a black cat because they are so affectionate.
Amen, Doris. And also, we know that black cats stick around shelters. They don't go anywhere. For some reason, black cats do not register. When people walk by adoption areas, they just don't register. Again, that's an indictment of the cage system. You know, black cats up against, and again, this is marketing 101. Black cats up against a bright purple wall will stand out, you know, and they need to go home. That's great, Doris. Thanks for saying that.
Thank you for your call, Doris.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the study out about coat patterns and other and types of personalities. Were there some other findings from that besides
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've always pushed is that orange tabbies are more playful, but in an almost aggressive way. Orange tabbies are, I think, in the neighborhood of 85% to 90% male. And if they're female, they're most likely sterile. They're programmed to genetically to be male. And those boys, especially when they're teenagers, are rambunctious, troublemakers, Dennis the Menace. And that also was part of that study as well.
Okay, well, let's take another call. Mara is calling us from Waldo. Good morning, Mara.
Good morning.
Hey, Mara.
Hi. We're big fans of your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And we always see the blurb at the beginning and see you playing the guitar.
Yeah.
We wondered what kind of music you play, as well as the question that I have real quick.
Well, I'm a songwriter. I've been a songwriter since I was 10 years old. I was one of those guys who, like, turned 16. I was like, well, I don't have a record deal yet. I actually came really close as a kid. The funny thing about it is that when the show started, I ran out of time for my band and had to break up the band. The great part is that I'm just now getting back in the studio. I'll be doing it at the end of this book tour, actually, in New York. I'll be playing a gig for the first time in about a year. And, of course, if you look at my website, I'll keep everyone updated as to where that gig is. And I'm getting into the studio, recording some new songs, and I'm excited. The music itself, I'm a rock musician. The funny thing is everyone thinks I'm a heavy metal musician, which is insane. I'm not.
Might be the beard.
It must be. I've got that Dimebag Darrell type of look. I'm not a metal musician. If anything, I skew more towards, I'm lyric based, but still based in the blues. So Tom Waits, Elvis Costello, Ricky Lee Jones, people like
awesome.
That. Yeah.
And Mara, it sounded like you might have a question about a cat as well.
Yes, I've got an orange tabby we've had for about a year now, and we love her. She's so lovable, and she's so great with my four-year-old.
Now, of course, as I'm saying, you know, they're all boys. You're like, oh, I've got a girl, orange tabby. That's
I do.
Great.
Okay. But she has been decapitating squirrels and bringing in mice and birds and all kinds of stuff down in our basement, which I get that she's a hunter.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, I see you doing so much play on the show with cats to get them kind of, to get their energy out. Is there anything I can do for her that might help her not bring quite as many dead animals into her house?
Well, first of all, I mean, you can do something very simple, which is put a bell on your cat's collar. So when they go outside, they're warning all the animals beforehand. That's first and foremost. If your cat has to go outside at all, you know, and of course you want to have a collar on them, putting a bell on there is a good thing. The second thing is, you know, one of the things that actually is to your advantage is you've seen your cat be a hunter, and now you can replicate that at home. And also getting your child involved is key, because having an interactive toy, I'm sure you've seen on the show me use that toy with the rod and the feather at the end.
Right.
You can be the bird. You can be the mouse. You can be the gopher or the vole. And telling your child to do that, role play, is something that comes so naturally to children that they can teach you. And you know, you're playing that literal game of cat and mouse. If you invest in being prey, your cat will invest in being predator, and it will exhaust them in the kind of way that hunting outside will. And I think that play therapy, again, I preach this on the show all the time, play therapy is the basis of a healthy cat and a healthy relationship between you and your cat.
Oh, yeah. Is that in every cat? Because I've had cats that don't do the hunting.
Every single cat. I believe that within every Persian, within every spoiled, you know, older cat, there is the raw cat. There is that almost, for lack of a better word, reptilian animal, which knows nothing but to kill. And that is, you know, we haven't messed with cats. Cats, in an evolutionary sense, are still here to do what they did tens of thousands of years ago. We just have to bring it out of them.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And are they gifts?
I was like, or what gifts? Oh, the decapitated beings?
Yes,
yes they are. In a really interesting twist, the way I see it anyway, it is sort of an amalgamation of relationships. I think that your cat is not only bringing you a gift as if to say, Mom, look what I did. They're also saying, Child, look what I've brought you. Do you know? They're also being maternal, bringing you food. So just as a mom would bring their young kittens food. So it's a great mix of relationships, but at the end of the day, what it means is I adore you.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
With guts.
Thank you so much.
Well, that sounds like good news for you and your relationship with your cat, Mara.
Yeah. I'm really excited about your book coming out.
Thank you so much. Hope to see you tonight.
Okay.
Well, let's take one more call before we go to break. Kelly from Grandview. Hello. And what's your question for Jackson Galaxy?
Well, it's more of a statement than a question, but
uh-oh.
Maybe you have. Well, I have had two cats raised from kittens. They were both black. One was long hair, one was short haired.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to jump on in the bath or when I was taking a shower, and I said, okay, you're getting a bath. And so I just take them in, and then when they get done, I throw them out. And then the long-haired cat died, but the other male showed up at the bathroom sink all the time, and I'm like, yeah, you want water, so I turn on the sink. Well, then later on, he just continued to meow. And so, like, maybe you want a bath. So I'd cover him up, you know, and then he's like, I'm not done. So then I completely cover him, and then I just throw him. And anyway, so now I just notice his behavior that he doesn't always want water. He just wants a bath. So a lot of people have that, I guess, misconsideration on toward that. So
the cats don't like water?
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, different, you know, a lot of times it's really about what the cat's experience is like as a kitten. If the cat's experience as a kitten is getting wet, they're going to get wet. And that's not to say certain breeds are much more prone to wanting to be in water. The Turkish Van, for example, is one of the only cats that actually fishes. They actually dive in water and fish. Fish is not a natural part of most cats' diet at all. But there's, you know, certain breeds that are meant for water. Bengals love being in the water, but little long-haired black cats. You never know.
Well, I was just thinking I might not like it if someone just threw me in the water. Or...
No. I didn't like it much either when I was a kid.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call, Kelly.
And there is one more thing I wanted to say.
Sure.
Cats don't like banjo. I had a Taylor 12-string, and I'd pick that up, and the cat would lay on my lap, but the banjo, he would not go near.
You know, it's funny. If you keep watching My Cat from Hell this season, I had the great fortune of working a case where, I won't give it away, we were working with a very tough physical condition that there is no cure for, but in trying to modify the behavior surrounding the condition, the guy in the home was a musician, the woman in the home was a voiceover artist, so I used what was called sound therapy. What kind of an instrument did that calmed the cat, and which one freaked him out? And it was the ukulele that the cat adored. But that guitar that he played, man, no way the cat went scattering. And I've got a history with that, too. My cats can't stand my guitar playing, so.
Well, the Taylor 12-string, it calmed my cat down more than anything.
I'll try it.
So you might have to change up your instrument, Jackson.
Yeah, everyone's a critic.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with calls from Anna and Cindy and a question from our own Kim Noble. We're talking to Jackson Galaxy and taking more of your calls after this. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Maria Carter. Our guest is Jackson Galaxy. He has a new book out and will be speaking at the Unity Temple on the Plaza tonight at 7. Call Rainy Day Books for more info. We're discussing cat and human behavior. And now we ask you, does your cat do something you just can't explain or stand? Give us a call, Kansas City. Join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And I believe our own Kim Noble has a question for us, for Jackson, actually, not for me. So, Jackson.
Yeah, I don't have a rollerball question, Maria. The cat question.
Do you play banjo?
I'm tone deaf.
Yeah.
First of all, Jackson, thanks for coming to Kansas City, and I know that you're doing a benefit for some shelters tonight.
Yeah, I am. Right before the event at Rainy Day Books, if there are still tickets available, it's a VIP event. It is a little costly. I think it's about $50, but you get to be with me real close one-on-one, ask me some questions. I'm going to be doing a talk about Cat Mojo. And you're going to benefit, amongst others, Wayward Waifs and other no-kill rescues and shelters in the area. So if you go to my website, which is jacksongalaxy.com, look for the tour schedule. There's a link in the tour schedule which will take you to see if there are indeed tickets available.
I think there are some. There were when I looked yesterday, and it's a great thing you're doing.
How is that possible? People, buy some tickets.
I have three cats.
Yeah.
My youngest, Magnus Carter, is is a polydactyl tabby.
Uh-huh.
He is coming up to 3 years old in July. I got him from a shelter at 7 months old. He was taken to the shelter when he was 8 weeks old. So he spent 5 months in a cage. I'm good with cats. I've always been able to negotiate with them, and we live together in harmony. However, food. My acupuncturist vet says this guy has dog energy. She didn't need to tell me. I knew that from the time he jumped up onto the table and stole broccoli from my plate.
Yeah.
And nothing I have done has changed his eating habits.
Uh-huh.
They're just, I mean, he's a holy terror around food. He's okay. Like an untrained dog around food.
Right, right. Well, and honestly, you know, when you talk about a cat, I'm really big on reconstructing a cat's life story, even if we don't know it. You know, I mean, I deal in the world of strays, and we by their behavior, by their mannerisms, by the way they are around food and territory and people, we rebuild a story about them. And your cat obviously had a really rough go, and food source was never guaranteed. So it is this almost built-in traumatic cycle that your cat is reenacting every day. What? Food? Got to go for it. You know what I mean? And part of that is, do you feed meals to your cats or free feed?
Feed them twice a day.
Okay. Now, remember, one of the things that you can do, and of course we all have jobs, I'm not even home for 3 weeks. But cats optimally will eat every 5 hours or so. Their digestive tract is short, it's straight, and they're meant to process food really quickly. So every 5 hours or so, you can actually work in at least one, maybe two more meals a day. And if he expects it at a certain time of day, his body clock adjusts to it, he'll probably be less apt to go for the food. That said, you know, a lot of this is building up confidence around food so that he doesn't feel that that need to just dive after it because it might disappear.
I have to feed him in a cage because he terrorized the other two. And the cage is a happy place.
No, but really, it's because when you say terrorize, what do you mean?
Well, he wouldn't let the other two eat. He would just be running around through all the bowls.
Well, here's the other thing. This is another one of the techniques that I use all the time. You either get what's called a slow feeding bowl, right, which I use on the show. You might have seen it. Looks like an upside down Bundt cake holder, right? It's metal. It's got a huge dome in the middle of it. And you take your wet food and you spoon it around the outside of that circle. And it literally just slows him down. The feeding turns into something that will take a little bit more time than just snarf. And you can also use a rock in the middle of the plate, and you literally mash the food up so he's got to lick through it.
I feed him in a huge bowl with it smeared all over.
Well, but the other thing is also that, I mean, nothing wrong with feeding them separately, but the cage itself gives that vibe of what am I missing? And again, that's something that is part of his existence, is I'm missing out on food source. So the more you can mash it up against there and feed in a different room, maybe, but not the cage itself, I think would lend itself to that.
Thank you.
You're
welcome,
Kim.
Thank you so much, and have fun in Kansas City tonight. Thanks for being here.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, KCUR's number one cat lover, Kim Noble.
I know. Yeah, it's amazing.
Let's take a few more calls. Anne from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I have two cats. One I've had for about 6 years now, and one I just got. Our neighbor moved into a nursing home and we took her cat, and they just do not get along even after 6 months together.
Okay.
And my question is, how can I encourage them to get along a little bit better, and how long is the average time it takes for them to get comfortable together?
Well, there is no average. I mean, some cats, you know, some cats will get along after a couple of days and some never do. And that, you know, one of the things that we have to remember is that we're in this for the greater good. If you know, we work all of these programs, and on the show you've seen me do God knows how many things. And at the end of that, one cat is saying to the other, you know what? I just do not like your face. I don't like you. You know what I mean? It's like roommates. I just don't like the way you, you know, cut your toenails in the dining room, that kind of thing. Then there might be a way that these guys just aren't meant to be in the same home. And that's one of those sad truths. Now, that being said, the introduction process is just crucial. And one of the ways that the way that I introduce cats is, what I mean, think about, what is their big motivation? Is their big motivation to like each other or to like you? No. Their big motivation, as we're just talking to Kim about, is food source. So if you are feeding your cats meals, which of course is one of the big keys, you do it, you know, on either side of a closed door, right? So this is how they get to meet each other, by smell. They get to say, every time I smell food, I smell that other cat. And the only time I smell food, I smell the other cat. So that cat must be a good thing. And that's where you start, not visual contact. The worst thing in the world is this common wisdom that you just throw them in a room and let them work it out. They never will work it out. You have to encourage that working out by divvying up food source and making positive associations. So I would say to you, back it up. You know, go to no visual contact and the concept that I call sight swapping. Sight swapping is I own the house, you own the house, just separate times of the day. Someone's in a bedroom for a while, the other one's exploring the house. Switch them out again and then do that feeding thing, and that really will help.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Anne. Eve on Twitter asks about a problem. Domesticated cats are a huge threat to wildlife populations. Do you have any more suggestions besides collar bells to curb killing?
First of all, get your facts, all right? Because there are certain outlets out there that are putting out junk science. And if you believe that domestic cats are killing billions of birds a year, I encourage you to get the facts. You're not getting your facts right. The Smithsonian put out a study recently that is flat out killing cats because it's putting out numbers that are untenable. You cannot claim that cats are killing that many birds. It just doesn't happen. And it infuriates me because it's so irresponsible to put that out there. It's literally killing cats. So I would tell you, get your facts right. The other thing is keep your cats inside. You don't want them to kill things. Keep them safe. Their life will be longer inside. Play with them inside, build enclosures outside. You know, I'm big on the concept of the catio. You know, build something that's enclosed and your cats can, you know, have the benefits of the vitamin D of the sun, hunting little bugs and stuff like that, but not killing critters outside. But those are the big things.
Okay. Well, I've always wondered, you were talking in your book about training cats. In my experience, I've not had a lot of success training a cat as a child, much harder than the dog. How do you go about that?
Well, again, the thing that we got to remember, and this is about Cat Mojo. Cat Mojo, what drives cats through this world? Ownership of territory, food source, right? Ownership. If you're saying, please me by doing something, good luck. Cat won't do it. Dog will. So when we're teaching them to sit, for instance, it's with food. How badly do you want to work for this food? Usually the answer is pretty darn hard. You know, if as long as you find what I call the jackpot food, the thing that cat will just, you know, crawl through broken glass for, hopefully not, but, you know. And that's the way we train them. Clicker training, positive reinforcement training has worked on every species. And we're talking chickens, we're talking gophers, pigeons. It works for everybody and humans included. If you're doing it right and playing to the motivation of the animal, it will work.
Okay, well, we have a ton of calls out there. Let's go to Cindy in Lee's Summit. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
And do you have a question for Jackson?
Well, I do. I have a couple of things to say. First off, I have a ragdoll cat, and she is just marvelous. And I had never been a cat person, and someone in my late 40s said, oh, you'd like one. And I went and got a ragdoll. And, I mean, I literally, if I can call her, she'll come to me, she'll sit. I don't ever give her treats. I roll up little pieces of paper, she'll fetch. If I have a box sitting around, which I normally do, I'll say, let's play hide-and-go-seek, and she'll get in the box, and I'll go, get down, and she'll hunker down in that box. And then she'll come, you know, and I just praise her. And she doesn't jump on any of my counters. I worked with her when she was a kitten, and I don't let her jump on the furniture. I mean, if I look at her, she'll jump back down. I mean, she'll try sometimes, like, you know, we're friendly, let's do this. She's just been a wonderful cat, and I don't know if it's just the ragdoll breed or if I just got very, very lucky.
Yeah, you got lucky. You got real lucky.
She's like a perfect little lady. I leave food out for her. All the time, and I leave water out for her, of course, and you know, she eats when she wants, and she doesn't when she doesn't, and I've always been told you shouldn't add a pet, especially to a ragdoll, and like I said, she's 10, almost 11 years old now, and my only problem with her is that people, when they come over, most of the time she hides, but now as she's gotten older, she's braver, but she'll rub across the bottom of their legs, and she has white hair if they have black pants on. And I don't, you know, I can't really scold her for that because she just wants to be petted, and most people pet and rub her. But I didn't know if there's anything I can do about something like that.
About?
I mean, that rubbing, going up, you know, going up against people's legs, if they could have dress clothes on.
Nah.
Or they could have,
Just have a lint roller around, that's the cure right there. Honestly, if your cat is finally coming out at 10 and 11 being social, you want to praise that. You want to encourage that. I honestly believe that will actually lead to her having a longer life, not having stress around people coming over. So, yeah, have a lint roller handy.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Maria Carter. Our guest is Jackson Galaxy. We're discussing cat and human behavior. Do you consider yourself a dog person, but also maybe have or yearn for a cat? Share your thoughts, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or post your comments on Facebook or on Twitter. Our handle is KCURCST. Let's now go to Harriet in Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Harriet.
Good morning.
Hi, Harriet.
Hi. Okay, I'll try to make this quick. Four cats. One is a Russian Blue who is highly sensitive, as you probably know about that breed. I am moving across the country. He knows about it. I have a woman who talks to my cats, and he's upset about it.
What does she do?
She talks to cats.
Oh, talks to cats. Okay.
Yeah, she talks to cats.
And
he told her he was upset about it.
Oh, a communicator. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, a cat communicator.
Okay, gotcha.
What do you think about Thunder shirts?
I don't like them.
Okay.
I mean, Thunder shirts for dogs plays into that basic need that they have to be swaddled, to be denned up. Cats don't have that. They don't have even remotely. They don't like being constrained. If a Thunder shirt works, and of course this is my opinion, a Thunder shirt, by the way, it's just a big sleeve you put the legs through, and it acts like a compression type of sweater. And it's
like swaddling a baby or something.
Exactly. It gives them that sense of being completely swaddled. Right. Dogs, it has worked really beautiful. They literally, they call it the Thunder shirt because it was proven to release that anxiety that dogs have around storms. Cats, it doesn't, it just, what you're seeing when your cat has a Thunder shirt on is shock and awe. It's not comfort. I use, for instance, you've seen on the show, I use a walking vest, and a lot of times I use that walking vest not as a walking vest, but as a way to control incredibly aggressive cats around other cats. It throws them off balance. It makes it so that they can't pounce the way they could before, and it reintroduces them in a more of a helpless way. But overall, I really don't think that it works the way it's advertised for cats.
Okay, let's go to Sally from Lee's Summit. Sally, it sounds like your husband has a problem with your cat.
Oh, boy, does he.
Well, big surprise.
I also have a ragdoll, and I absolutely love him. He's beautiful, and he's kind, and he's social, and he minds me so beautifully.
Your husband, not the ragdoll.
My husband.
On the other hand.
Winston will go to his feet and sit there and look at him, and then he gets this rascally look in his eye, and we know what's coming next. He is going to bite his feet. And my husband will say, Winston, no, that hurts, Opa. Now, I need to know, when he comes to me, I say, uh-uh, and he goes away. But with my husband, I don't know how I can get him. He won't.
It's about consistency. So what I want to know, what does your husband do to encourage that behavior? Because I promise you, he does something. Does at some point he cave in and play as if his feet were toys or his hands are toys? Does he play with the cat? Oh, he does. Well, tell him to stop.
No. he loves the cat.
Yeah.
And the cat, and he wants to just pet him, but he'll say, when he gets close to him, then the cat wants to bite.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that what your cat's doing, it's called play aggression. And they just get so worked up because they associate that person with play that they go for that bite. That's all the bite is. The bite is, oh I'm so excited. I'm so excited. But, you know, bite.
Okay.
And so your husband is doing something to encourage that. So all you guys got to do is take apart your husband's behavior and see how that plays into the cat's behavior.
I know I jiggle my leg a lot, and so I've had cats attack my foot.
Of course, exactly. Your husband might have happy feet. Your husband might just jiggle his leg a little bit too much, and at some point he has associated his legs with toys. We've found
that
with hands.
And he's
too.
Always at the same. On the same position on the sofa when he does that. So,
yeah
I can see.
You got it.
And he does want to play.
Of course.
And he started out, I'd say, honey, he just is playing. And so he would get up and go get a toy.
There you go. And what I would say now, here's the next step that you guys can do to make this stop. What you said, you know, the rascally look and everything. Back that up. Rewind the tape 30 seconds. You know, when he's starting to walk across the room to your husband, that's when you break out the toy. Don't wait till he settles in that position, gives the rascally look. Back it up 30 seconds so you're not rewarding that look.
Good. Well, that's what we'll try. We'll try to do it way before.
Good. Great. Well, tell me how it goes.
And I heard her say that you were Kansas City's biggest cat lover. I got news for you. You're not the biggest cat lover.
Well, I mean, technically, I might be the biggest, you know.
Because I love them, too, especially these rag dolls. Oh, my gosh. Have you had a rag doll?
Have I had a rag doll tear me limb from limb? Yes, I have. No, I have not had one.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Sally. Next up, we have Mary from Lawrence.
No, it's my turn.
Yes, Mary?
Hi,
Mary.
Hi, I have two cats. And my problem is with my orange tabby. He's about 10 years old, and he likes to poop on the carpet, and we don't know why. We moved. He used to poop on the bathroom rug. It didn't matter. Like, you get a new rug. It's the physical spot rather than, like, you know, we've done the sprays and all that stuff. Even if we, like, turn the carpet, he goes back to the same physical spot.
Well, let me tell you, I'm gonna cut you off only because this is why I would go to your house. There's no way that I can tell you why your cat's doing that on the carpet by talking to you for 30 seconds. But what I can tell you is that before you start getting frustrated, you must already be frustrated, but what I would tell you is, first of all, you've got to rule out any kind of physical problem. You've got to make sure that your cat is not associating the litter box with pain when they poop, and that's why he's going outside the box. So a thorough checkup is called for, making sure that it's not painful for him. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of dry food. If you're feeding dry food, you should probably stop. You want to feed them meat, nothing but the meat, and that'll help. Also, you can add in probiotics into the food. You can add in what's called slippery elm, which is something that can help lubricate their system so it doesn't hurt when they poop, things like that. But in the meantime, take a fecal sample, bring it to your vet. I know that's a lovely thought, but it will help things.
Well, the poop's right there on the carpet anyway.
Exactly.
Sounds like.
It's available to you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a few more quick calls. Ellie from Lee's Summit, good morning. What's your question?
Good morning. We have a cat that came to us kind of with an unusual situation. She actually fell out of my husband's car after he had driven 30 miles.
Whoa.
I know. We took her in and we loved her, and we got her checked out. She didn't have any microchips. We tried to find her owner, had a full health checkup on her. She seems healthy, got her shots and all that. But she is 100% content staying on my son's top of his bunk bed, and she can stay there for days at a time if I don't bring her down.
Mm-hmm.
And I do bring her down once a day, take her in, get her some wet food, she'll drink something, she'll go use her litter box, and then she'll go right back up.
Okay, so let's change the terminology around that. When you say she's perfectly content to be up there, no, she's too scared to come down. Let's look at it that way, because now we have to challenge that cat. I don't want you to do anything that caters to being on top of that bunk bed. We've got to open up the rest of the world to her and show her that she can have confidence down from where she is. And it's one of those things, you know, when I talk about tree dwellers, cats being tree dwellers, I mean in a confident way. They're up there and they're kind of hunting up there, and they would love to be able to watch the room from up high. Okay, if that's your cat, then your job then is to create what I call the cat superhighway, shelving, cabinets, things like that, to make it so the cat can circumnavigate your child's bedroom without touching the floor if they don't want to, but still moving around and gaining confidence. Then through treats, through play, through, you know, cajoling, whatever you got to do, don't pick her up and bring her down. Get to that point where she just is so curious that she needs to come down because of what you're providing her. You will see a massive change in her personality. I challenge you to challenge her.
Okay, well, let's take one more quick call. Mike, we just have a minute, so what's your question? Mike? Okay.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I didn't know that you were talking to me. Hey, thank you for taking my call. Just for the sake of time, we're living in Blue Springs now and getting ready to move to California in a couple of months. What's the best way to positively enforce my cats so that they handle the transition well?
Well, I mean, you mean the move itself or to the new home?
Yeah, mostly to the new home. I've just heard some horror stories that cats don't really like to move and get a new territory.
Well, it's true. It's true.
And they're inside and outside.
Yeah, remember, you know, that cats are, again, we go back to territorial ownership. And if they go into this new space, they don't own it, you know? So the thing that you can do, it's the concept I call base camp. As you move into that house, you take everything that is theirs, that is, you know, from beds to towels to those little donut beds that you can have, condos, dishes, whatever, things that smell like you and smell like them, their litter boxes. I mean, if you're driving across the country, you're going to think I'm insane, and you might think that anyway. Don't clean out the litter boxes. Travel with litter boxes that have their litter in it, so their smell is in that room. So you go into base camp and they go, huh, wait a minute, I own this. I own this by proxy because I owned it before. And then you slowly rotate all that stuff that's in base camp out to the house. You let them explore it at their pace, and they'll learn confidence that way.
Well, we just have about 30 seconds left. If you just had one piece of advice for a cat owner, what would that be?
Back away from the hysteria. Don't think that you know what your cat is thinking. Guarantee it that you don't know. And just don't try to think about their motivations in terms of personalities and things like that. Think about cat mojo. What makes them move through this world? It's ownership of territory. Filter it through those cat glasses. And that way you are disinvesting yourself emotionally from the problem. If you do that, you will solve the problem. If you stay in the world of emotions, you will not solve the problem. You'll be frustrated.
Okay, our guest today was Jackson Galaxy. He has a new book out, Cat Daddy, and will be speaking at Unity Temple on the Plaza tonight at 7. Call Rainy Day Books for more info. We were discussing cat and human behavior today. Thanks for joining us. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore transgender relationships. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Suzanne Hogan. Up to Date is next with a look at Truman's desegregation of the U.S. military and a new 90-mile view. I'm Maria Carter, and this is Central Standard.